Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie and John here on one of our rare late night recording sessions.
Yeah, it's late. We got work in the morning, but we're going to crank this one out for you all.
Busy time of year. Got to record when you can, and we're not going to miss an episode if at all possible. And we've got a really good one for you guys today. Before we get to that, as always, if somebody writes a five-star review, we'll read it. It's a great way to give case suggestions, give us feedback. We really appreciate it. This comes from Lethal Weapons, L-E-E-T-H-A-L. I like it. It says, great podcast, longtime listener, glad to hear you cover the Amy Bradley story. I grew up with Amy and Brad, and I know the family still misses and looks for her. Thanks for shining more light on the case, Lee.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lee.
I think it's interesting. I don't think we spend maybe enough time thinking about the fact that there are people out there that are still involved in these cases that may hear what we talk about. I think we're careful and respectful and all those things, but it just always strikes me as unexpected when that happens.
Yeah. We've tried to take the approach that, you know, these are real people we're talking about. This is not just a sensationalized story that we're telling you. If you want a fictional podcast, we do have one of those. It's called Left on Dead. But yeah, this is real life stuff. And I feel like we do a decent job of keeping this, you know, focused on the victims more than anything else.
We sure do try. I actually did an interview with the newspaper Mississippi State this week. I haven't even told you this, about the ethics of true crime and desensitization. And it was a good conversation. I don't know when it's coming out, but we'll put a link to it when it comes out.
I had no idea. That's awesome. I do have a couple of people that I would like to personally thank over on Patreon. Ams came in from Canada. So thank you, Ams. And then Austin came in as well. Both of those came in at the base level, a few dollars a month, and you get access to all of our bonus monthly content. And then we try to do early ad-free episodes as well. So thank you.
Is that Ams as A-M-B? S,
it
like,
is
like AMS. Maybe short for Amber.
AMS, yeah, Amber. I can't think of anything else it could be short for, but maybe she's just named AMS.
Maybe that's it. I'm not Canadian, not familiar, but
I was debating on whether or not to make a joke. I thank you for being a Canadian and still following an American true crime podcast show. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, awesome. We appreciate that, and again, we appreciate everybody that supports the show, even if that's just by tuning in, and we try to bring great cases, and this one's been on my radar for a while, John. It's, I don't know, still ongoing, and there's a lot to get to.
All right, well, I'm excited. Why don't you get the ball rolling?
We're going to start out in Fairview Park, Ohio.
Tell me geographically where Fairview Park, Ohio is at.
Cleveland-ish.
Gotcha.
The Rocky River Reservation. On June 14th of 2019, Tony and Caitlin Vaca were driving out there. This area is like a huge nature preserve. It's about 2,500 acres, so big area. And it's a good space if you want to get outside the city, feel like you're out in nature, and get away from kind of the noise, if you will. That afternoon, Tony and Caitlin were excited. They were planning on going out, enjoying the wilderness a bit, and doing some kayaking. And around 5:20 p.m., they pulled into a parking lot along Valley Parkway, and they were greeted by a pretty horrifying scene. They saw a man lying in the grass beside a bench that was about 100 feet from the parking lot. And, I mean, you pull into a place like that, and seeing people isn't odd, but seeing one person laying on the ground is certainly concerning.
It puts your spidey senses up, right?
Tony approached the man and saw that he was facing the river. His knees were bent in an odd way. His eyes were open, but he had a bullet hole in his head. Then he saw, 6 feet away, was the body of a woman that they couldn't see from where they parked, and she was lying face down on the riverbank. Tony yelled to Caitlin to go back to the car and call the police. Caitlin ran to the car, where she grabbed her phone and called 911, but she also saw a man sitting in a truck parked nearby, and she just got an odd vibe from the person sitting there watching all this happen. And when she called 911, it was 5:22 p.m. We were unable to attain that audio, but she called for help.
So authorities responded to the scene almost immediately, and the man who was on scene was shot twice in the head, and his name was Carnell Sledge. He was 40 years old. The woman was shot one time, and she was 33-year-old Catherine Brown. So a little bit about Catherine. She went by Kate. She was one of three girls who grew up in Cleveland. Her sister Alex describes Kate as goofy, weird, but in a good way. I feel like that's how you would also describe me, maybe?
Yeah, maybe in a good day.
Fair enough. Family says that they could tell what kind of mood she was in based on her level of goofiness, and I love people like that. They said that she had an infectious laugh, she loved animals, and adored her family, especially her nieces and nephews, and they affectionately called her TT. Now, every Friday, Kate went to her older sister Lauren's house for a hangout sesh. They would eat pizza. It was like a pizza party and just hang out with their family. But the goofy and lighthearted Kate had some demons of her own. So her sister Lauren said that she went through rough patches and struggled with anxiety and depression. And her main coping mechanism for years was alcohol. In 2017, however, she got sober. She improved her diet and began exercising, and she actually lost over 100 pounds. Lauren says that Kate was on a path of self-discovery those last few years of her life. And Kate's dad said at the time of the murder, his daughter was at the top of her game. She was enjoying life, and it seems like she had worked through some of those struggles in her life.
Yeah, it sounds like she was headed in the right direction, at least. Everybody goes through struggles of some kind, but sounds like things were really tough and finally headed the right way for Kate. Carnell Sledge was known to those he loved as Nell, and he grew up in Bedford, Ohio. He and his family would later move to the area of North Olmsted. He was one of two boys, and he came from, by all accounts, a happy and loving family. Nell was known for his big smile and happy demeanor. He was considered the glue that held his family together, and that applied to his friendships as well. His friends would say that he loved his grandma more than anything, and she said she loved him from the day he was born. And I've got kids, but certain children that live in my home have different special relationships with their grandparents, and I love seeing those develop. And I don't know, I'm not calling them favorites, don't hear that, but special relationships in certain ways.
You know, that's just another way for saying favorite, but yeah, I get you.
Anyway, Nell's younger brother, Terrence, was considered a good kid as well, and he looked at Nell as a role model. He says it was because of Nell that Terrence originally got into sports. Nell was a big guy, but often described as a teddy bear. That's what people call you, John.
Yeah.
Mostly behind your back. He was a gentle soul and someone he always wanted to help other people. Since 2002, he had been volunteering as a transportation coordinator and youth consultant for a nonprofit that provides mental health care to disadvantaged children and adults in his community. He also worked as a special ed specialist for children with disabilities at the Westlake School District. In 2017, he started an organization called Sledge's Helping Hands, which was a foundation that helped transport these kids to sporting events, to social events, to help them get out and have experiences they may not otherwise get. So Carnell Sledge, actively out there making the world a better place.
Sounds like both of these folks, just good folks. Kate and Nell met in a club in 2009, and for the next 10 years, the two had an on-again, off-again friendship. When one of them would be in a serious relationship, the friendship would cool off a bit, but then they would reconnect, and it was always as if that no time had passed. I have friends from high school that I don't talk to every day, but when I do talk to them, it feels like that. Like, we just pick up right where we left off, even if it's been a couple of years.
Love that.
They leaned on each other in hard times, and they always made time for one another. At one point, Nell told Kate that he thought that they were going to get together one day. And the two had actually planned to meet in the park on the day that they were murdered. So this was something that seemed as if they were both looking forward to. They wanted to get back together and catch up.
Yeah, I mean, none of this is a happy story, right? But it certainly makes it feel a little more tragic to know that the intentions for meeting there were more than just kayaking and a hike. They were going to, you know, reconnect and talk about their relationship and those kinds of things. Police searched the crime scene where they found three shell casings from a small caliber weapon. The shell casings were close to the bodies, which indicated that the killer was probably in close range when the gunshots took place. They thoroughly searched the area. They never found a weapon, and for that reason, they decided to rule out a murder-suicide. Since there was no weapon in the area, then somebody couldn't have done it. So they said that this was a double homicide, a double murder. And murders in these parks were not common. This was the first murder in that area in 20 years, which I find very surprising given it being a popular rural area. Usually that's somewhere that these things happen more often.
I mean, we live in a small town, and anytime there's been a murder, it is huge news. But I mean, I've lived here almost 20 years and there's only been three that I can think of.
Yeah, it's not very often.
So yeah, I'm sure that when it did happen, it was huge news throughout the community.
Kate's apartment overlooked the Rocky River Reservation, so she often went there to exercise. She used it as a place to meet friends and family. It was like her hosting place. The spot where she was killed was actually just 1 mile from where she lived. Also less than a mile away was the police department and the Big Met golf course, yet nobody heard or saw anything, at least as able as we were able to tell from witnesses at the time, or a lack of witnesses, I should say.
I don't know much about the area, so is it a thing where if you hear a gunshot, it's a rural area and that just kind of happens, so you don't think anything of it?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think this was an active shooting area. This was a nature reserve, and I know there's one behind our house and they have a shooting range, but I don't think that's necessarily as common here.
But less than a mile away from her apartment, I mean, you would think that someone would have heard at least a gunshot, but who knows? Police initially concluded that robbery was not the motive because there was nothing missing from the scene, Kate's or Neil's bodies or the cars that they had driven there. Kate's cell phone was at the scene. Neil's work and personal phones were still in his car, and their wallets were both visible in their cars. And all the jewelry they had on, any electronic devices, everything seemed to be still in place. Blood on the back of the bench led police to believe that Neil was shot from behind. And when he fell to the ground, he was shot once again. They think that caused Kate to jump and run towards the riverbank, where she was also shot in the back of the head, probably while she was actively running away. Detectives believed that the killer either drove or walked along the Valley Parkway to get to the scene and then left the way that they had came. They say that the killer could have also escaped through the nearby woods. This is one of the many mysteries in this case, since the kayakers didn't see any cars when they pulled into the parking lot.
Yeah, this is just, I know it's a rural area, but it's not as secluded as I think most people would probably picture when thinking about this scene. It was popular. There's a parking lot there. It's not like people are pulling along, driving four-wheelers out in a path. Like, people went here.
I mean, this might sound stupid, but I think of, there's an area close to where we live that it's technically in the middle of the woods. But it's a place in the middle of the woods where people go because there's a parking lot there and there's a trail. So while it may be secluded, there's a lot of people who typically find themselves
there. And that's exactly the parking lot that I had in my head when picturing this case. Now, once they made an initial assessment, they decided to go ahead and bring in the Ohio Bureau of Investigation. When we get back from the break, we'll talk about their involvement in the case and what they think may have happened.
Thank you.
Like John had mentioned earlier, agents' first assessment showed that there were a lot of different ways that this killer may have escaped the scene after shooting Kate and Nell. About 300 feet south of the crime scene was a gravel pathway that connected to a running path or a bike path. About 500 feet away was the Lorraine Road Bridge that could have also been used to get away. I've been to the area of Lorraine for a wedding several years ago, actually, in the Cleveland area. I know some folks that live around there, so I have an idea of this community. And again, this was shocking to everybody. So immediately, the FBI got to work on a timeline. The morning of the murder, Nell went to work at Crescent Digital. There, he spoke to a coworker who didn't sense that anything was wrong. Nell was upbeat. He said he had been planning a Vegas vacation for later in the week. Surveillance footage from Kate's apartment showed that she got home from work at around 3:38 p.m., Next, she checked into her complex's gym, so she went for a workout. Cell records show that Nell texted her at 4:02 asking if she'd like to get together. Authorities believe the reason for meeting up was discussed over voice calls, so they don't have any record to say this is why they were meeting. At 4:10 p.m., Kate ended up calling Nell, and they talked for about 10 minutes. Nell left work at 4:24 p.m., and at 4:31 p.m., Kate signed out of the gym. And as far as we know, it was around that time that they both headed out and got ready to go to the park.
At 5:01 p.m., there was a police officer whose dash cam caught Kate's car traveling toward the crime scene and then also caught Nell's car 2 minutes behind her. At 5:08 p.m., they have records that Kate unlocked and checked her phone. So 14 minutes later, the kayakers called 911. So for those 14 minutes, Nell and Kate sat on the park bench at some point, and then someone came there to shoot them three times. So I guess the question, I mean, obviously the question is who's responsible, but there's also the question of why did the two meet that day? Well, they were able to ask family members what they thought, and Nell's brother Terrence wondered if this was a regular thing for them to do that no one knew about, or if it was a one-time occurrence. Nell's mother believes that this was a last-minute decision because she knew that Nell had already had plans to go to his grandmother's house for a family dinner that night at 5 p.m., and the park was not on the way. It was actually out of his way. So she thinks that Kate maybe needed help with something in her life, and Nell wanted to be there for her, so he made a last-minute change of plans. The two were known to lean on other when things got tough, and Kate's sister Alex knew that she was having a hard day that day. Alex said if this was Kate's idea to meet up, then it was probably because she needed a friend, she needed someone to talk to. However, Alex says if Nell was the one who initiated this meetup, she thinks that he was going to ask Kate to be more than just friends. So, unfortunately, the only two people who knew how the meeting was arranged or why, you're not able to ask.
And in an investigation, you want to know all the variables, right? You want to know why the people are there, how they got there, when they got there, all those things, because it may or may not matter. The reason for their meeting may have no role in the crime that was committed, or it could be really important.
I mean,
you never know.
Yeah, I mean, if Kate was seeing someone else and this person found out that she was going to the park to meet up with a guy, then that's someone you got to look at. I mean, likewise, like if Nell had someone in his life that didn't know about Kate, you know, what's the motives there? So yeah, you need to know everything because you never know when something could be helpful.
And with so many other unknowns, they started to focus on, was this a random crime or was it planned? If it was planned, then which one of them was the target or was it both? Neither victim really had assets. They didn't have insurance. Somebody was going to inherit a house. They didn't have, they weren't robbed, obviously, at the scene of the crime. They didn't have any known enemies, and neither of them had a criminal history, which are usually things you see in somebody's background that may lead to a violent altercation. Early on, Kate's sister Alex suggested it may have been a hate crime, since those had been on the rise in the Cleveland area around that time. One detective told Kate's dad, Tom, that over 30 hate groups were based in that area, which it depends on what he means by that area. Obviously, Cleveland and the metropolitan area, the suburbs, is huge. So wherever those hate groups coming from, that's not clear. Tom thinks maybe the killer was driving through the park when he saw a black man and a white woman sitting together, and he didn't like what he was seeing, and he pulled over and shot them. Nell's mom agrees this is a possibility because of some of the prejudice that she had experienced in the area recently. So they certainly were not ruling out the idea of this being a hate crime, but I mean, you have to try to rule out other motivations as well.
Another theory was that the murders may have been gang related. Maybe this was part of a gang's initiation. There was allegedly some gang graffiti on a nearby walkway. Police, however, think this is very unlikely. That it's typical that for a gang initiation, the crimes committed usually target a rival gang and not just innocent people. But they have not ruled this out as a possibility entirely. Nell's dad doesn't believe the gang theory, and neither does Kate's sister, Lauren. Lauren says that since all this happened in a 14-minute window, it seems unlikely that someone just happened upon them and then decided to shoot them and then leave. It seems like this was more of a calculated murder in Lauren's opinion.
Yeah, I mean, for them to get in and out and be undetected during that time frame certainly does make it look organized instead of random.
And the motive, I mean, if it's so, walk with me, Jamie, because it's late and my brain's not braining, but if robbery is not the motive here, what other motivation is there be? Would there be to kill just two random people?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at somebody who likes violence for the sake of violence. A lot of serial killers that we've covered would seek out people in areas where they wouldn't get caught. Obviously, these are people who were missed, and the community continues to miss them, so that's not the case. But yeah, somebody who's just looking to be violent, to be evil. The gang initiation, I don't know, it could ring true, but also I don't know that they take their activity out in the woods very often. Could be wrong about that. Not sure.
That seems like a logical, yeah, I think you're right.
So let's talk about some suspects. This is still unsolved, by the way. So still trying to figure out who was involved, and there are some names that have come up. So let's talk about those. We mentioned that the couple that called 911 saw somebody sitting in a truck in the parking lot, and he was still there when police got there. He had worked for a roofing company, and he told police that he was sitting there and he saw Kate and Nell arrive. He said he was in his truck writing up work orders and estimates when the murders took place. Said he didn't hear any gunshots, see any suspicious people in the area. Said he didn't even notice a scuffle happening. Police and the families, especially Nell's mom, were really suspicious of this person and his claim that he didn't see or hear anything, because that's really tough to believe. One investigator explained that with the small caliber gun believed to be used in this murder, plus a potential silencer, which I think also changes the narrative about this, who this could have been, it would be possible for the roofer to sit in his truck and not hear anything, especially if he had music or true crime cast or something on his truck.
Yeah, I mean, if I am working on something and I have AirPods in, and I have especially like the noise activation or the noise canceling feature activated, I'm not going to be aware of what's going on around me, just to be honest.
No,
we edited out, but I was thinking of something and I was researching it, only to discover after I said it that you had already said that while I was researching it. So,
I mean, I wasn't going to call you out. But
I can get for sure how in this day and time, you're not really paying that much attention to what's around you.
And he was very focused on his work. Again, according to his story, authorities looked through his devices and they determined that he was actually working, that there was documentation being entered at the time of the murder. And eventually they let him go as a suspect, which was kind of controversial to some people involved.
Well, I mean, so he was still at the scene, right, when police showed up?
Yeah. So he hadn't fleed the scene when the couple came on.
Right. So Also, did police check his vehicle for a small calibered weapon? You know, I don't
have it in front of me, but I'm going to assume so. But yeah. You know what?
But if he's actively putting in data and they can verify that, but also did they verify that at that time or later? So that's interesting to me. Just put a pin in that. Another suspect was Nell's ex-girlfriend, Alyssa Miller. Alyssa and Nell met online a year before the murders, and during that time, Alyssa describes her relationship as complicated and hard to define. She says, though, that the first time she met Nell in person was like she knew him her whole life. A month before the murders, the two were talking again, and Alyssa says they were planning on getting back together. Alyssa last saw Nell on June 1st, 2019, just 3 days before he died. On the day of the murders, the two had been texting. Nell last texted Alyssa around 3 p.m., so just a couple of hours beforehand. She responded that evening not knowing that he was dead. The following morning, she learned about his death from a family member's Facebook post. People at Nell's funeral claimed Alyssa was acting strangely and that she was having an over-the-top reaction and over-exaggerating her grief. Again, we've talked about this. I mean, it's really hard to gauge someone based on their outward emotions. You never know what's really behind those.
Absolutely.
Then one of Nell's close friends told his family and authorities that Alyssa had her concealed carry permit. Police investigated Alyssa, and she cooperated in that investigation. She even turned over her weapon for them to examine. Tests determined Alyssa's gun was not the murder weapon. She told police that she was at work during the murders, and her alibi checked out. Alyssa said she never knew about Nell and Kate's friendship, so she doesn't know who would want to hurt them, but she says it wasn't her. She thinks that the killer is someone Kate knew because she can't imagine anyone wanting to hurt Nell.
Which is the same thing pretty much that Kate's family would say as well. But Kate's sister, Alex, did try her best to find a suspect that may have been in Kate's life, maybe somebody they didn't know about. Alex read Kate's diary, and she had read about her writing about weight loss, and she felt more confident, and she felt like she was finally ready to get back into the dating world. Kate had signed up for Tinder and had been on a few dates with a couple different people. On Friday, May 31st, just a few days before the murder, she went on a date with a man named Lester Bullard. After the date, she called her sister Lauren and told her there was something off about this guy. She said that his eyes had kind of a black look to them, as if they were, I don't know, like an empty soul. She felt unsafe on the date and ended up leaving. That same weekend, Kate looked up more about Lester and found out that he had been involved in some violent activity and was actually attached to a murder a decade earlier. Back in 2007, Lester and his brother stabbed a man named Ray Melendez to death and then set his body on fire. For that crime and his role in it, Lester was only sentenced to 4 years in prison. He told Kate he had been in jail, but he left out the violent piece of his past. She called her other sister, Alex, and said that she felt sick over what she found out about Lester and the fact that she was going out to meet him. And she said she didn't think, Alex said this, she didn't think Kate ever planned to see Lester again. And as far as she knew, Kate hadn't seen him. Police went on to track down Lester. And given the time of the murders, he had an alibi. He was actually in the southern half of the state of Ohio at the time.
That's a lot, man. And I mean, there's definitely a history there, right? So if you're capable of murdering someone, I think you're capable of murdering someone again. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there's no other indication of violence than previous violence, I think.
And what was his alibi? That he was in southern Ohio the day of the murders?
Right.
Well, it's hard to be two places at one time, so if that checked out, it checks out. Another suspect was Kate's ex-boyfriend, whose name was John. Her family claims that John was abusive and violent towards Kate in the year that they were together. Her dad described him as the kind of guy who would not take no for an answer. Kate told her family that the two had gotten back and broken up years prior, but that he had started seeing him, or she had started seeing him again in secret. Surveillance footage shows that he visited her apartment the night before she was murdered. Kate's sister, Alex, thinks if Kate ended things with John again, then he would retaliate, or could potentially retaliate. She thinks John showed up at the apartment complex the day of the murders and got into an argument as she left to go to the gym, and she thinks that John then followed her to go to the park. After the murders, there was a family member of Kate's who went to John's house and told him that he was not welcome at her funeral, and while that person was there, they saw a handgun sitting on the table inside of his house. The police claimed that John was at a barber shop at the time of the murders, but it's unclear if police have video surveillance footage that definitely confirmed this. So this is also something that's plausible.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you go to certain barbershops and you're paying electronically, maybe there's a receipt and a timestamp showing this person paid with their card in this city at this time. I haven't been to a barbershop in years, obviously, but back then we always paid with cash.
This was 2019. At that time, I go to a barbershop. I'm one of the few people that I think pay with a card. Most people at a barbershop pay with cash, but was this a barbershop or a beauty shop, quote unquote? I don't know. So
I don't know. Yeah. Which one do you go to?
A barbershop.
Sure you do. In February of 2020, the police put out a $100,000 reward for any information leading to an arrest and the murders of Nell and Kate. Kate's family alone helped to raise $70,000 of that. They were certain that somebody knew something and they would come forward given the vast amount of money available. But nobody did, and very quickly the case went cold. The families say initially that they were hopeful and they felt like police were working really hard and they were communicating everything to them. As time went on, though, they started questioning all the police had done and maybe some things they thought the police should have done that they hadn't. Going back to Kate's sister, Alex, she said, "The communication that happens is completely done on our end. We reach out. We ask for meetings. We're even providing the tips that we see on the internet to detectives because they're not overseeing it. And so we would love to have animosity toward the police," she's saying this, "but there's not even a relationship at this point." So they have kind of lost faith in the law enforcement that are working on this case. And, you know, it's so impossible to tell from a distance what is happening. But I think if you are a family member of a victim and nothing's happening, you have to put your frustration somewhere, and that's where it ends up. And maybe it should be, maybe it shouldn't, but I'm not the one to tell them who and who they shouldn't be upset at. Now, the kayakers that had called 911 have gone on to say that they don't think the police did a thorough job at the scene that day of questioning people that had come in and out of the park, the guy in the parking lot, or handling the crime scene or the evidence with care. They said that the parkway wasn't shut down for at least 45 minutes, and others continued to pass through without being talked to, without being stopped, and have their IDs checked, so they have no record of who was coming and going. There was no police tape to mark off caution so people would stay away, and there were people, the law enforcement, not just random people, but they were touching the bodies and potentially polluting the evidence.
I mean, it's very possible that whoever was responsible could have just found themselves back and was one of those people who found themselves walking back through this area, so it's sad. I mean, it's an area that is not accustomed to this, right? So if you're not accustomed to it, that means you have very little practice with it and you're not as efficient as bigger cities who have to do this a lot. After the murders, the families put up signs in the park asking for tips, asking for people to contact the police to let them know if they saw anything. But police asked the family to remove the signs. They also asked the family to remove a memorial that they put up near the bench where Kate and Nell were found killed. Lauren thinks the police wanted the signs down because they wanted people to feel safe in parks, but she pointed out that if a crime like this can happen, then they are not safe at a park. So interesting that they were asked to take down the signs and the memorial.
What do you think about that? When you first said it, I was like, that's dumb. Why would they do that? And then you mentioned that they maybe mentioned it was not to alarm people. And I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But then people deserve to know if they're walking into an unsafe place. So yeah. I've changed my mind three times in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why, like, did the signs get plastered in too many places and it was becoming a situation, but I don't think there's anything in the world wrong with posting signs, especially where people are going to be, like if there's an area where there's restrooms or some kind of place where people would need to go, then why not have a sign up? And as far as the memorial, I mean, again, I don't know at what area this was in, how big it was. I don't know the details of it, but I mean, people put up crosses on the side of the road where there's vehicle accidents. So I don't think I would want to be the police chief and have to tell this family to take it down. I would probably not make that decision. I would let it happen because it did happen. Lauren contacted the mayor's office of the surrounding communities and asked to put out signs outside the park entrances that were in their towns. And only one of those mayors agreed. So I don't understand why there's such pushback on putting up these signs. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either. If it wasn't even in their town, I guess I kind of get a little bit more of, we don't want this to be associated with our town. It didn't happen here, but still such a touchy situation given that so many people have been hurt and continue to hurt from this situation. One of the FBI agents on the case has claimed that the Bureau has used all of the tools available to help in this case, and they have thoroughly vetted all of the suspects. They submitted it to the BAU, the Behavioral Analysis Unit. They conducted over 270 interviews and received and investigated over 165 tips that seemed legitimate when they came in. Some of those came as a result of this case being featured on Unsolved Mysteries and the new Netflix version, and it was on one of the October 2024 episodes. Detective Lieutenant Don Silvis of the Cleveland Metro Parks Police said that there's certainly renewed interest in this case, which is important. It's a much larger audience than we typically had, so it's been extremely valuable. So here we see police seeking help and attention. He also claims that police have not put this case down since the beginning and that they will continue to work it until there is justice. So if you ask the police, they say we're still on top of it. The case, in our opinion, isn't even cold. It's active. We just don't have any good current leads.
In the aftermath of these tragedies, Nell's family started a walk. It's the Nell's Walk for Justice. This is a way to honor him and also bring attention to his case and Kate's case. Last June, both families held a vigil for Kate and Nell at the park, and this was in order to mark the 5-year anniversary of the murders. But unfortunately, the case remains cold. There is still the $100,000 reward that is available, and police and FBI ask for anyone who has any information, they can submit their tips online to the FBI, who are located in Cleveland. They can visit tips.fbi.gov, or they can simply call the FBI hotline, 216-622-8842.
Yeah, this is a case, and we often say, you know what, somebody here knows something. And that may be the case here, but unfortunately, the only person that knows something may be the killer. Like, this is a tough one in such a remote area that if the guy in the truck didn't see anything, and if he's truly innocent, then that's a tough nut to crack. It may just be one person came in, did this. Maybe they wanted to be violent. Maybe it was one of the individual's exes, but it's tough.
I mean, police have the dash cam footage that shows Kate on the road in her car and then Nell on the road in his, couple minutes behind Kate. It makes me wonder, and maybe they have. We certainly don't know everything the police have done, but was there any other cars that were seen in that video? Have they tracked those people down? Did any of those people then have any kind of connections to Nell or Kate? There's a lot of work in these cases that can be done, and again, police don't tell the public everything because they need to keep some cards close to their chest for strategic reasons.
And this was a big park. Look, there could have been people that were there that day that saw something that somehow don't even know that this went down at the park that day. There are people out there that could have information that could break this thing wide open, but they don't know that they have information. So while I'm hesitant to say that there's somebody out there that knows something, I'm confident in saying that spreading information about this case and sharing it with everybody that has ears is one of the only things left that can help solve this one.
And unfortunately, because I've seen it too often, and in particular in a case around here locally for us, the further time, the more time that passes, I feel like it's truly harder and more difficult to solve these kinds of cases. So it's been over 5 years. We need to push this really, really hard. So there's maybe not multiple people that know what happened, but there's definitely one person, and that's the person who's responsible. And maybe they've told somebody else, or they've indicated that they're responsible in some way. I mean, it just takes a little bit of information to start building a case.
Yep. So if you have any information, obviously let somebody know. If you don't, then please share this or another podcast or a news story or Unsolved Mysteries or whatever you want to share with people. This is a worthy cause to share information to help this family, these families and this community hopefully get justice.
Absolutely. Jamie, this is, this was tragic, but as far as the kind of content that we have on our show, this is the kind of content that I enjoy. It's hopefully helpful to solve the case in our very, very small way, but these are the most intriguing kinds of cases for me to cover.
Because I do think this can be solved, and we can't let the story go away. I think
absolutely
anything we can do to keep it out there certainly doesn't hurt anything in this type of situation. So encourage people to share the information, and especially if you've live in or have been in that area, especially around that time, stop and think about what you saw and what you may know, or who else may know something.
Absolutely. Guys, thank you for tuning in this week. If you haven't, please leave a 5-star rating and a review. That helps this podcast get into the ears of new listeners.
Yep, we really appreciate you guys. Obviously, new content every week and a new true crime to go here tomorrow.
Yeah. Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.